Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Support for WEAA is provided by Live Baltimore Fall 2018 Trolley Tour. It's coming to Baltimore Poly High School on Saturday, September 22nd from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. You can meet and greet real estate professionals. You can experience all kinds of various neighborhoods. More details are available at livebaltimore.com. That's livebaltimore.com. All about the Live Baltimore Fall 2018 Trolley Tour. Coming to Baltimore Poly High School, Saturday, September 22nd, 8:30 to 1 p.m. Folks, before we went to the break, I'll let you know it's the weekly wrap, which means you can put whatever you want on the table. We're having an open discussion. It's pull up a chair. What have you been talking about, thinking about this week? I threw out the story of Valentino Dixon, a black man who was set free this week after spending 27 years in prison for a crime he did not commit. 27 years. Now, I want to talk about this because he has offered an extended forgiveness, and forgiveness is a hard thing. Let's listen to a quick clip from Valentino, and then Wyatt, I'm coming straight to you.
27 Christmases, 27 mm-hmm. birthdays, right. And now you're out. And when I look at the sketches, I was thinking, right. You know, when you think that the key,
right,
that unlocked it,
right,
was you and your love of art,
right,
really. And you've,
right,
loved this since you were a little boy?
Yes, since I was about 3 years old.
Has it resonated to you that because you had that talent,
right,
you captured the attention of somebody who captured the attention,
right,
of somebody who,
right,
led to this day?
This is the power of God. You know, this is how God works. You never know how it's going to happen. You just got to keep the faith, you know? You got to hang in there and keep the faith.
There were a group of undergraduate students at Georgetown,
right,
University, excuse me, who,
right,
saw your story in,
yeah,
Golf Digest, took,
right,
up your,
yeah,
cause,
right,
and eventually helped to exonerate you. What,
right,
do you say to them this morning?
Those are my students.
Uh-huh.
What I told them yesterday was wherever they're at, because they're from London, Parrish,
mm-hmm,
you know, and I told them wherever they're at, I'll be there for them. You, mm-hmm, can call me up if you ever need me.
He said, call me up if you ever need me. He was wrongfully accused, convicted, locked up for 27 years. 2 days after he was arrested, the man who actually did the crime confessed. They threw out the confession. He's been there. He is finally out. He has not yet been financially compensated, but we are hoping that that happens. But can you extend forgiveness? How easy is it to forgive? We have Wyatt on the phone from Baltimore. Wyatt, thank you for pulling up a chair to the table. How are you, Wyatt?
Hello?
Hello, how are you?
Oh, you talking about Robert, man.
Oh, your name is Robert. They put down Wyatt. I'm sorry, Robert. How are you?
Yeah, I know. Well, y'all hit on some topics, and that was pretty good. One of the things, since y'all talking about the criminal justice system in this country, you notice how quick they allowed this guy to get off from shooting them two police because the police went into the wrong house.
Oh, this is, are you talking about Amy Goober? This is the white woman who shot, not her.
This happened here in Maryland.
Oh, okay. So go ahead. Talk about it.
The police in Bristol, one of these counties, the police had raided the house, went into the house,
mm-hmm,
and the guy had pulled out his shotgun.
Oh, yes.
And he shot two of the officers. Okay?
Because they went into his house.
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
Someone else. But it wound up being the wrong house.
Mm-hmm.
But his last name is Lewinsky. And I'm just saying, they took care of that problem within 18 hours.
Mm-hmm.
This guy was off the hook. Now, you can count on your fingers how many times the police have went into the wrong house of a black person.
Right.
And he fought out.
Right.
And he walked out alive and unconvicted with, and wasn't convicted with aggravated assault,
right,
or attempted murder.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. So the question is, how do we change this system, though, Robert? Like, what do we do? Can we do anything about it?
Yeah, we need to, you know, it got to be some law change on the basis of these things.
Right.
And the other thing is, no one's talking about it.
Right. No, you're right. You're right. You're right.
Well, I highlighted and how quickly this guy was exonerated, And we talking about a guy who spent 27 years in prison for something he didn't do?
No, he did not do it. So where does he go from here, Robert? Okay, so it's 27 years later. Dude went in 1991. Where do you go from here? Your daughter is a grown woman now.
Where do we go from here?
Where does he go from here?
We don't know, because we got to change the practice of how they administer justice here in this country.
I agree.
That's one of the problems. It has to be colorblind.
Yeah, that's where we are. We're trying to correct wrongs. So, see, this is what gets me, Robert. How do you go about correcting historic wrongs, right? So if we talk about setting up a colorblind system, we have to think about all the people that are currently in the system who are still suffering, right?
Yeah. We got a problem with our own people.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that I hold on with Obama, he didn't pardon not one black pastor.
Yeah, well, that has not happened. We know that. Yes, you're right.
Yes, I've been in jail for over 40 years.
You're right.
And for him to pardon Johnson Pollock or Walker and all those rest of the people, no, we didn't give him money like they did. But we did put him in office and voted.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
That should have been one of, at least the courtesy and appreciation that he should have had in terms of those brothers were directly affected by his election.
Yep,
and
you're
if
right.
If it wasn't for those brothers back in the 60s, he probably wouldn't have the consciousness that he had today.
You're absolutely right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you calling, Robert. We have Thomas on the phone from Reisterstown Road. Thomas, how are you?
Dr. K.
How you doing?
How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for pulling up a chair to the kitchen table.
I got two things that's really sticking in my craw right now. Okay. The first thing, you talk about Judge Kavanaugh, okay?
Right.
What you're seeing is privilege. White men or privileged white boys, when they do something, they go and get their daddy's friends and daddy's comrades to look out for them, okay? Now, Judge Kavanaugh first said that he don't remember being at that party, okay? Mm-hmm. Then he said that he wasn't at that party, but it's come out now that he was at that party. So do I believe he tried to rape that young lady? Yeah. I believe that, because that's what some little privileged white boys do.
And black boys, too, right?
And some black boys,
yes.
Too.
And, of course, I got to say this. Hold on, Thomas, because I got called on the carpet about this yesterday as well. As well as women, white women and black women, Hispanic, that all people, regardless of race, ethnicity, or gender, have been involved in sexual assault as the one who is perpetrating the crimes. I just want to make
that's
note.
True.
Go ahead.
That's
all right.
Very true. Now, Dr. K, the last thing that really sticks in my craw, Baltimore City and this current mayor we have and the city council decided that they're going to have a parade to honor Ray Lewis,
right,
who's done nothing for the city of Baltimore about take money from the city, okay? Ray Lewis, they're going to honor him with a parade, okay? This is the first time that Baltimore has ever honored anybody like that with a parade. Why is that? Why do we continue to throw good money after bad money? That's why I said if the comptroller, Joan Pratt, can't get a handle on them spending this money foolishly, then she needs to be taken out of office, and we need to have an investigation on how come she can find hundreds of thousands of dollars for Ray Lewis.
But you know, we have these kind of comments given all the time. Whenever something like this happens, we're trying to figure out, Thomas, how did we get here? I would argue, and I want to see what you think, we got here because of what happened on voting day. Like, when you look at everything that's happened, folks, what happened? We went out and we voted people into office, and the people who are currently in office are making decisions like parades when our schools don't have adequate AC, like parades when our kids are still suffering.
I'm going to have to beg the difference with you on that one.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
Past mayoral election we had, right?
Mm-hmm.
Former Mayor Sheila Dixon won 93% of the voting districts, right?
Right.
She won 93% of the voting districts, but still lost that race, with Catherine Pugh only winning seven voting districts. Now, one must have to ask themselves, is there some fuzzy math going on there? If you win 93%...
You probably should win, right?
Right. If you win 93% of the voting districts, you're supposed to win that. One must have to ask himself a question. The superintendent of voting down there, Armstead Jones, when is he going to lose his job?
That's the question. That is the question. But little by little, you see how time is passing. You see how things are becoming normalized. It's what we saw. We see happening in Washington, D.C., because we had a concern dealing with popular vote, electoral college. And here we are now dealing with the impact of that system all the way around, from the national down to the state level.
Pay attention to what's going on in the state of Georgia right now with Ms. Abrams. Right now, they declared her the winner right now. But
right.
The guy who she was running against, the Republican, he wants to challenge it now.
Yes, he does.
I think she beat him by some 300-something thousand votes.
And see, this is what we're dealing with. I think that's what's very important, that we've got to pay attention to what is going on and be aware. I mean, be aware of why our vote matters, why we should vote, why we don't wait until the votes have been counted before we start talking about things. We get on the ground before. I mean, I'm just kind of looking up that the votes for Catherine Pugh, Sheila Dixon, it fell along racial lines in Baltimore's mayor's race. People wanted to get more information. Folks, you can just go back to the May 2016 issue of the Baltimore Sun, talking about how Pugh narrowly defeated former mayor Sheila Dixon and exactly what Thomas is talking about. You can just pull the Baltimore Sun. It lays everything out. Thank you so much, Thomas. Oh, go ahead, sir.
You would think Uncle Festus would do something about this. Larry Hogan, I call him Uncle Festus, okay? You would think he would want to do something about this.
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't think he wouldn't want to do anything. Come on, now.
He would. Because now what's going to happen, them same people that rigged that first race for Catherine Pugh, I wonder if they're going to be able to rig it for him this time.
Let's see what happens. Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate you. We have Ernest on the phone from Baltimore. Ernest, how are you?
Oh, fine. Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. Thank you for calling yesterday as well.
Now, Strom Thurmond. Strom Thurmond had a child by a 16-year-old woman. I mean, 16-year-old young girl.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we talked about that yesterday.
Okay. Well, they had to leave South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to Delaware, I think. But he took care of her, the child, and the mother the whole time. Paid the girl had to come down to him, meet him in South Carolina or at Washington, wherever he was, and he would give her cash. Never wrote her a check. And then when she moved to California and got married, or before she got married, when she finished high school, he took her to South Carolina State. Is that the black college down there?
Yes, to South Carolina State. Yes, he took her down there. To do what, though? What did he do down there with her?
He took her into the president of the college and said, this is my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And she went to college. In other words, I don't want no trouble out of y'all there.
Okay.
So she graduated from there. Then she went to California. She got married. He took care of her, her children, and her husband. Took care of everybody. And like before, she would come up and meet him.
Okay.
And he would pay her cash, and she would go back down. Now, because she kept quiet all that time, she continued to receive her child support payments. And, I mean, her support payments. And then after she got older, and after she was teaching school and stuff, he stopped writing her checks. So, I mean, he probably was a racist, but he wasn't a racist to his daughter.
He took care of his daughter. Okay.
And his daughter's mother and her grandchildren.
Okay.
And his black grandchildren. Now, the other thing is, you notice that when a black person gets out of jail, first question they ask him, are you angry?
Right. And they did ask. And they did ask him that today, and he said no.
Huh?
They did ask him that today,
well,
and he said no.
I pay attention to that. They asked all of that, and they just as happy as could be. Just as happy, no anger at all. Now, this guy, the police, first of all, the New York Police Department had a history of locking up and framing black people. Mm-hmm. Remember the
Central Park jogging case. Yeah.
Right. The young man that they put in jail and never charged him, he got out and committed suicide.
Yes, yes. Carla brought that up earlier.
Now, they had two police detectives, Luazo and Shamil. They have thrown out so far 50 cases of perjured, where they perjured and lied and used the same witness on all cases,
mm-hmm.
a black West Indian woman. I don't know who she was. She was a drug addict, but testified in all those murder cases and all that stuff. And they supplied her with drugs. None of them went to jail. These police that let him knew that he was innocent and kept him in jail. Have they been indicted yet?
Well, no. Let me just be clear. He just got out. We just saw him on the Today Show. He has recently been released. So in terms of him receiving remuneration, in terms of next steps, none of that has been released. He is just out doing the rounds now.
The rest, Luazo and Jamil,
mm-hmm.
has never been indicted for perjury and obstruction of justice. Nothing.
Now these two men that you're mentioning, are they, just so I can make the connection, because I'm not that up on what happens in New York with the police department, are these two officers you're mentioning, were they involved in his case, or you're using that as an example of what happens there?
Other cases.
Okay.
Because they were homicide detectives.
Okay.
And it's a lot of those homicide detectives up there. I don't know if it was all of them, but this was a pattern for them.
Right.
A pattern for them. And nobody, to my knowledge, has ever been indicted and brought up on charges.
Well, we definitely will watch this case. Thank you so much, Ernest. I appreciate you. Okay, we have Simon on the phone from Towson. Simon, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine, Dr. King. Two things I want to think of and talk about. I'm not sure if anyone brought it up, but with the Rite Aid shooting yesterday, right?
Which yes.
Which, of course, is unfortunate.
Right.
But a custom that whenever the shooter is white, you would hear the police say, "We're not going to honor this despicable person by showing their photo."
Mm-hmm.
But yet, the person yesterday was not white, and they had about 3 or 4 photos showing them, honoring
right.
them. So you see, that's why I think we spoke about that before.
Right,
you
talk about in terms of like media representation when
like
the person involved is black versus white or Hispanic.
Right.
Okay.
So when it's white, you don't see their face. When it's black, it's pasted all over.
Now, can I just make this note? I just got to tweak that a little bit, Simon. What we have noticed with the research that when the person who's doing the crime is white, they typically tend to use photographs that show them in a favorable light. They may pull their graduation photos
or them
with their family, and that when it is a black or Hispanic person, they typically tend to use the mugshot photos that portray them in the worst light ever. So we do see that happening.
Right. So we have that reinforced again as evidence yesterday.
Right.
But I have a quick personal thing. Police once entered my apartment wrongly about
mm-hmm.
4 years ago. I was living, and I was living at a Dunhill apartment right off Liberty Road, exit 18B, I think it is. And I was in apartment 303. And there's an Asian family downstairs. In 203,
mm-hmm.
and at 11:30 at night, banging on my door, boom, 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 Baltimore County Police, open up. So my wife and I and my son, probably 5 years at the time, I went to the door. There are 4 police officers outside. So I know what to expect. So I told my wife, I said, "You go to the door,
right?
And I'm gonna stay back in the living room passage area and hold my son in front of me." Because if they're going to come in shooting, hopefully they would not shoot in the direction of a child.
Mm.
They would, think twice.
Right.
So eventually she went to the door after, she asked them to let her dress properly and so on. And they came in. And they said they have a report, a drop call of an elderly woman being held under duress, and the call dropped.
In your apartment?
In my apartment. And... So I said, well, She said, "Well, we have." She said, "Dale, we don't have any elderly woman here." And there was one who he insisted. He said, "Let us, and we need to search." I'm like, "I need to be alive." So I put lights on, and he turned his flashlight on. And you know those flashlights inside the house at 11:30 looked like if it was 12 midday. Right. And he went through all the rooms without a...
They didn't have a warrant. They show you a warrant. They just opened up and went through everything.
Yeah, he went through the bedroom. He went through our closet. He's searching back and forth. But I knew right away they were talking about the people downstairs. And I'm not trying to be funny, but it is possible that the lady downstairs called with her accent and me having an accent, so I know about accents. And she could have probably said 2 or 3, and it sounded like, you know, true. So they came to the wrong thing. They left without an apology. And I'm alive today to talk about it.
Wow.
But I didn't go to the door with these 4 people because, you know, they're going to say I flinched. They're going to say I reached
Right,
because
you were afraid. I mean, we saw that with, you know, but Botham Jean was just shot in his own home. That's the black man in Dallas, Texas. Yeah. But also, I just want to make a note that there is a case. We talked about it earlier on this show earlier this year of a black man where the cops came to his backyard. He was holding his, I think, 6 or 8 month old child, and they still tased him.
Yeah.
Even though he was holding the baby in his arms.
Well, John is not far from where I'm from. I'm from the islands, too. And, I'm very familiar with St. Lucia.
Right.
So, but the thing about it, I'm just saying, I just was able to be lucky or probably socially smart that I knew how they think.
Right.
So I didn't go to the door. I let the woman go to the door. And women are perceived to be less dangerous than men. So they dealt with her first, and they looked along, and they saw me with my 4-year-old son standing in front of me.
Right.
And what is so unfortunate about what the cop in Texas did is that one of the first lessons of discharging a firearm is that if you do not know what is in your sight picture,
you just don't start shooting out.
Seen,
right.
And beyond, if you're not sure, then you can't shoot.
Right.
So
all right.
Based on that, you know, they're going to see a child in the side picture.
Right. No, I agree. I am glad, Simon, that you're here to talk about it. Thank you for calling and giving us a story. When we come back, Eric, Karen, Glord, I'm going to take you. It's the weekly wrap. The kitchen table is open. Pull up a chair. Let's talk. 410-319-8888. Keep it here. Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. KY's Whitehead. Folks, I am just excited. It is Friday afternoon. It is the weekly wrap. It's the time of the week, the one day out of the week that we let the listeners drive the topics. We're saying we have the kitchen table open. Just pull up a chair. What have you been talking about? What have you been reading about? What have you been thinking about? I'm not the expert here. Some of the things I know about, some of them I don't. You're telling me new information, which is why we enjoy this time. 410-319-8888. Pull up a chair. We have Eric on the phone from Randallstown. Eric, how are you?
I'm doing great, Dr. K. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for pulling up a chair.
Wonderful. I just want to bring up 2 things, if I can. The first would be Maryland is always listed on TV as one of the bluest states in the country.
Yes, but...
but when it comes down, when it comes time for an African-American or a black to run for senator or governor, this state becomes anything but blue.
Right.
And the black candidate gets no support from the Maryland Democratic Party. And, you know, I'm just very dismayed by the fact that really there's only 4 dominant areas that the voting base comes from. And that's Baltimore City, Baltimore County, Prince George's County, and Montgomery. And for any African-American running for senator or governor, it's just troubling that the black candidate can't get any support. And I even criticized, I saw Facebook had a little article where they were praising Governor Hogan because he criticized Donald Trump. And I wrote to them and I said, you mean to tell me you're going to, right when the election is coming up,
right,
that you're gonna give shout outs to the Republican candidate over your Democratic candidate? And I remind everyone that this is the second African American that's going to lose the governor's race,
right,
with no support. And then everyone always looks to the black voter for their vote. But then when it's the black candidate,
right,
everyone is jumping ship and they want to vote for the Republican.
I mean, that's going to be a huge race when you talk about lining up. You know, one is the Republican, Governor Hogan, currently sitting here in what they call one of the bluest states. He is a Republican. And Ben Jealous.
Yeah.
And I think it is fascinating to see when the final votes are tallied. What I like to see, Eric, is how does it break down in terms of demographics? How does it break down in terms of race and income?
Right.
Like really taking a look, just like, you know, we did after the election of Donald Trump. I was not as interested in Donald Trump winning. I got that because there's nothing we can do about it. But when you start parsing out who voted for whom, how many white women voted for Donald Trump, to me, that was telling. About the kind of support he had, even though on the surface, everybody seemed to be supporting Hillary on the surface. But when you start looking deeper, it is fascinating because Donald Trump wouldn't have gotten to that seat, even though we know electoral college versus popular vote, without having so many white women who went to that booth and cast that vote in support of him and his policies.
And my other real point, and I'm gonna get off, and I want to hold up the line. But the other point was the other day you were talking on the subject of entertainment and the lack of progress that blacks make in terms of movies,
yes,
and TV. Well, one of the things that my wife and I, we always make a point of looking up is, and this will tell you definitely if a black movie is going to succeed. As an example. Spike Lee's movie, The Black Klansman, which
right.
was excellent. That movie was released, I don't think it was released in 1,000 theaters.
Nope. But his movies never are. You notice that, right? He's never
yes.
able to crack that type of ceiling.
And it's not just him. But any movie that is of quality, where you're going to get stand-up acting, the movies get no distribution by the studios.
No, they don't get the kind of support. And I want to take things like Black Panther off the table, and I want to take Ava DuVernay's, when she did her kind of sci-fi film with a young black girl starring in it, I want to take that off the table, because you're talking $100 million budgets that they were dealing with, which is very different.
And I found out that one of the reasons why they're not giving any of these movies support, because they also look to the Asian market. And it was discovered that, especially in China, they don't support any movies that generally are featuring black actors.
Unless it's black. Now, because I looked at this when we were talking about the Oscars last year on the show, unless it's black actors who've reached a certain kind of level. Like when you start talking about Will Smith, for example, crosses over very well to the Asian market.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk about the music, for example, if Beyonce crosses over to, it seems like black, I'm putting actors, entertainers who reach a certain status level seem to be able to cross over into many different markets. Not all of them, but some of them
right.
do. You know, because Will Smith's movies open very well in the Asian market.
Okay. And but that was basically it.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate that you pulled up a chair. Hey, Karen from Baltimore County. Karen, how are you? Welcome to the kitchen table.
Hi, Dr. K. How are you?
Fine. Thank you for pulling up a chair and for holding.
Thank you for the invitation. Just wanted to put something on the table and to see if maybe you or the audience would have an interest and maybe work this out. Upcoming will be the tax season.
Mm.
And what I'm understanding, a lot of people are going to get hurt with this Trump tax stuff that's putting out. I mean, I think it's the home interest rates or things that we as people use, contributions, things like that,
right,
are being taken off the table. So it's going to be very rough when that season rolls around and people are shocked and surprised what things they can and cannot take and use. I'm understanding that itemization is just about off the table. So
right. The mortgage interest deduction, I think, is what you're talking about.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, a lot of us use that.
Yeah,
so,
and if you have a home equity loan, you actually are going to be hit. If you have either a big mortgage or a home equity loan, this mortgage interest deduction will impact you. You know what, Karen? You just gave us a good idea. I'm so glad you called, because I think right around tax season, I think we should do a show with someone, with an accountant, someone who does taxes, who can walk us through this.
Yeah, and that's a good idea. I was hoping that you could say that you all could consider doing that, because it's better for us to be forewarned and forearmed than, oh, my God, what is this? What's going on? I mean, we know that they've socked it to us, but I don't think people realize about how much.
I'm glad you said that, because the other show idea we had that one of our callers did on Friday, calling, asking for us to do a series of shows talking and helping black people in particular, anybody who's listening, of course, you know, how do you invest?
Yes.
Where should you be spending your money?
Yeah,
you know, when do you buy a house, to really help us, since we have such a large spending base, that $1.4 trillion, how do we take our large spending base and really start to make some strides as a community and stop being left behind every step of the way?
And thank you, Dr. K, for that. And also for the gentleman who was talking about the Korean-owned or Asian-owned places, if there are a list of, and maybe this, you might want to consider this too, black-owned cleaners, black-owned nail salons, if there are any left, black-owned, I understand there's a black-owned beauty supply company here in Baltimore City, so why not we start frequenting them?
And I'm so glad you said that.
So we can, and I understand that someone, and I have to look this up, a person did a year search and purchasing items from black-owned cleaners, black-owned everything. She went through and she wrote a book about it. So
yeah, I think it's called My Year of Buying Black. I know exactly what you're talking about. But we've been working here on the show, and I'll put it up on our Facebook page, what we call the Baltimore Green Book, you know, kind of the Green Book similar to the Green Book we had in the black community back in the 20s and 30s of black own businesses. And we ask people, give us the names of them. Let's do a running list. Because if you're going out to dinner, for example, if you're looking for a place to stay, a place to take your children, I mean, I would like to support black owned businesses, which definitely are suffering under this particular president.
Yes. And we need to, we need to start working together.
Thank you so much, Karen. I appreciate you. We have Brother Haki on the phone from West Baltimore. How are you, sir? Pull up a chair.
Yes, ma'am. And thank you, Dr. K. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Yes, Dr. K. Well, I just left a campaign event for the Jealous Campaign. Actually, one of the senators from New York, Kristen Gillibrand, was in town to endorse candidate Ben Jealous, and as well as the lieutenant governor for the state of Maryland, Susie Turnbull, was present. And we were in Baltimore at the Post 19, which is the African-American veterans. And we know many veterans have been left behind by both the current governor as well as the this president. And so, you know, I mean, I know the gentleman said something to the effect, but let me just give some facts comparative to 2014. At that particular time, 2014, during the Brown run, unsuccessful. Mm-hmm. He had only 14 statewide organizers. The Jealous Campaign has 50 and over 23 offices. And more has been done, you know, and of course, there may be some people who may be apathetic based upon dollar amount, but we know that, as we see in Florida, dollar doesn't always win an election.
Right.
And so I just want to, you know, that clip is online.
Thank you.
We discussed veterans' issues, from homelessness to the opioid crisis to health care. And so, you know, I mean, people should go to BenJealous.com, make an educated decision. You know, a lot of people, you know, flip-flopping on different things. But, you know, we see what the person in the White House is doing, and it's not good for us as a people. That's
no, it's not. It's not, and it's not. I just want to kind of just add to what you were saying, Brother Hakeem. I'm glad you called. I always like to remind people that all politics are local. That I know we spend so much time looking down at D.C., and we need to kind of turn our attention inward. That it does matter who's the governor here. It does matter who the mayor is. All politics are local. So don't just wait until the national election to come out. Like, these local elections are important. Our governor, that race is very important about the direction of where we're going as a state. And where we're going here in Baltimore City, it's very important. So I'm with you. I appreciate
you
calling.
I'm just happy that the senator from the United States came down to endorse.
Yes, absolutely.
Been jealous, so, you know.
Absolutely, that says a lot.
What may happen with some of the local people do care, you know, about this election, and so don't get it confused. And we want 1 million voters, and if that is able to happen, Ben Jealous will be the next governor for the state of Maryland. Thank you.
Thank you so much, sir. We have John B. on the phone. John B. is leaving PG County on his way to Baltimore County. How are you? And thank you for pulling up a chair to the kitchen table.
Good evening, Dr. K, and it's an honor to pull up a chair at the table. Well, I had called a while back when we were talking about the air conditioning system in the school and why they couldn't come up with solutions. And I know the solution that I came up with is a workable and doable solution. Well, I'm a sort of think-ahead type of person.
Right.
So winter is coming. Our baby's going to have heat.
Oh.
And we get ready to have a parade.
Yep. Come
and
on.
All I want to know is my grandson's school going to have heat? Because I want to know now. I don't want to wait till November come or December come and they in school with coats on. So I'm going to put this out, and I know city council people listen and the mayor's office and everybody. I know they're going to still have that parade.
Right.
But come Monday, can we get with the facilities people and the physical plant people in the Baltimore City Public School System and start working on this heat issue? Because I know they're not ready, and everybody in Baltimore City know they're not ready. And if they need some ideas, they can continue to listen to this show, and I will call and says I have some ideas
on
how we can resolve this heat problem.
Well, you know what's interesting, John, and I thank you for calling. It is almost as if that we live in a city that doesn't seem to recognize that the seasons are going to change. So we don't think about having air in the school until it's deathly hot and the babies have to go back. Because once they go back, we can't put AC in there. We're not thinking about the heating problem that we had in the spring. We won't think about it again until it gets cold. And all of a sudden, we're back in the middle. Why is it that we always seem, in this city, when it comes to our children, we're always like one day short? Like, it's almost as if we're shocked that the seasons change and that our babies need things.
This is unacceptable. And we as parents, and I'm a grandparent because my kids are out of school now, we need to be on them about it. And you're right, part of it is people who we elected. But then the other thing is, let's hold them accountable. If I got to go by myself and stand on North Avenue with a picket sign with Leo Burles and the rest of y'all, I would do it. Because we got to get this
We got to do something.
Winter is coming.
It is.
It's not going to miss us. It's not going to skip
it
over.
Never does. It never
it's
does.
So let's get ready for the winter.
I think so. And John B., when you go down, I'm telling you right now, on behalf of myself and Justina, when you go down with the picket sign, you call us, because today with Dr. K, you know we love the protest here.
So all right.
You include us. Folks, okay. I just want to add in some of the comments from Facebook Live. John Kearney said, and I agree with you, John, I appreciate that. He said, Dr. K, don't wait until tax season. People need to look at their withholdings and things now. I'm giving Justina the sign. We definitely will do a show. We're planning a series of shows dealing with finances because we think it is very important, and we will make sure we put on the table tax season. Folks, it's interesting because the other thing that has gotten me thinking this week, because this is still, you know, weekly wrap, so I can bring up any topics I've been thinking about, is thinking about what happened in Charlottesville, South Carolina. I mean, thinking about the Charlottesville Nine. And it's because three of the survivors, 12 people were shot, 9 were killed, 3 survived. Dylan Stormrook, when he went into that black church, these members here of Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church, he shot and killed by 20-year-old white supremacist Dylan Stormrook. 3 of them have now come forward. They're telling their story. They're talking about what happened to them. One woman, Felicia Sanders, is the mother of slain victim Tawanza Sanders. There's another woman, her husband, Reverend Clemente Pinkett, was shot and killed. His wife, daughter were inside the building. They have two girls. She's raising them by herself. One Bible study member, Polly Shepherd, her life was spared because Dylan Stormroof looked at her and told her he was going to leave her alive to tell the story. I want to take a listen to the clip of Polly Shepherd and Polly Shepherd talking on the Today Show with Hoda about the fact that she has decided to come and tell her story. Let's take a listen to the clip.
There was a light in that room. It's almost like the lights was off, but they weren't, remember?
Yes.
It was like we were in a twilight. It was two different lights in that room. He had a laser on that gun. That was one of the lights. But the other light was, it was a quiet. It was like you were in a different world.
Yeah. She says she felt God's presence.
I have no doubt. Mm-hmm. That he was in that room with us.
With all that loss, you still know he was in the room with you.
I know God was in that room, yeah.
I know that we're all people, and you feel the same pain, and you feel the same hope. So, Polly, for you, the idea, I would think that you'd be livid, angry, want revenge, want to just take the guy by the throat, you know?
I was that way at first. But then I thought about Felicia. Felicia had lost her son. And I said, if she could forgive, why are you so hard-hearted you can't forgive? So from that day on, I had a release. Because forgiveness is like, you think you're letting somebody else off the hook, but you're actually letting yourself off the hook. Because if you keep it, there's no healing with hatred. You have to love each other. That's our second commandment.
That was Polly Shepherd. She was one of the survivors of what happened in Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina. These three women are coming forward and they're telling their story. They offered Dylan Stormroof forgiveness early on. They offered him forgiveness because they said forgiveness is something that they would be trapped by the anger, by the frustration, if they did not release it. Forgiveness was a way of them releasing the hurt and pain. But in listening to them talk, this happened 3 years ago, folks. They're saying that, you know, there's still days when they're not able to get through the day effectively. Senator Clemente Pinckney's wife talks about how she looks at her girls and she knows that they'll never have a father-daughter dance, that they'll never have their daddy walk them down the aisle when they get married because of the actions of white supremacist Dylan Stormroof. Now, understand, folks, he went into this church, African Methodist Episcopal Church. He prayed with them. They were in prayer service. He prayed with them for an hour, actually said later that he thought about not shooting them, and then stood up and did it anyway. Felicia Sanders lost her son, Tawanza Sanders. She also had her granddaughter underneath her, using her body to shield her granddaughter, who was at the time, I believe, 5 years old. This is what we're talking about. Forgiveness is hard. I just want to kind of throw that out. How do we forgive? Like, what does that look like? We have this on the table. We're thinking about Valentino, the black man who just got out after being wrongfully convicted for 27 years. He was in jail in Attica for 27 years. And he has also offered forgiveness. I just want to talk about it. 410-319-8888. It's the weekly wrap. Pull up a chair. We have Rob on the phone from Forest Park. Rob, how are you? Thanks for joining the table, sir.
Well, Doc, it's a pleasure to sit at your table.
Thank you.
And believe it or not, I'm going to talk about forgiveness today.
Please do.
And I know you've been talking about it all, you know, all the time you've been on. And I said, I got the hint. So, you know, I've been through a lot, and it has taken me years to learn how to forgive others. And first thing folks say, well, I forgive you, but I'll never forget. Now, that's where the problem is.
That's where the problem is.
Yeah. So I said, well, that's them. But like I said, my heart and conscience is clear now. But like I said, it took me a while. And there are a lot of folks walking around with cold hearts. And I didn't even come over the airwaves. But I can forgive them as well. So, Doc, look, like I said, I told Miss Justina, I've been laying low for a few days, and it's good for me to listen to some of your callers. Hey, look, I'm amazed, and I think it's wonderful that you're equal opportunity, because some of them I wouldn't let on the airwaves at all. See, but like I said, forgiveness is good. You have a good weekend.
You too. Thank you so much,
I
sir.
Love you all, okay?
I appreciate you. We have Mitchell on the phone. Mitchell's a new caller from Northeast Baltimore. Mitchell, welcome to the family. It's the first time I got to ring the bell today. How are you?
Yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. A great show. I love it. Because Mr. Leo Burst, I know him personally, so I agree with a lot what he was talking about. I've been to a couple meetings and things with him concerning citizens groups. My main thing that I like one of your callers had mentioned, because I was listening to you on the radio app, and you was talking about the home deduction. I didn't hear the rest of it.
Oh, the mortgage interest deduction.
Yes, because I'm glad you brought that topic, because I'm a person that's in my turn 50 this year. So I'm also paying attention. A lot of my generation, I don't think we're paying attention to Social Security.
Yes,
and what's going on and how that. So that's another topic, because I believe us, our general society has been dumbed down, especially African Americans, and we're not paying attention to those things. I have now the situation that happened with the young lady up in Aberdeen yesterday, Harford County.
Yes, yes, at the Rite Aid distribution center.
Yes, at the Rite Aid. Now, one of my concerns is they said this is like the third thing that happened up in that area, so.
Right.
I just want to wait to find out the facts more, but I know the one young gentleman, when he worked at a granite place, and it seemed like the atmosphere up there is kind of intense, because
right.
I have a co-worker friend of mine that said he worked up that area, and he said it's really intense up there. So if you can get my meaning, the atmosphere.
Right. I see what you mean.
So I'm just think about it as a little food for thought and find out and see if there's a pattern.
Right. And see what's going on. We were tracking. I mean, it was when we got the information about Aberdeen, we actually added it to our list so we can see over a period of time what is going on so we can track it, like you're saying.
To find out if there's a situation where the businesses are, and they had the same type of attitude, because I saw a program years ago on TV that on some of these jobs, they actually train the management how to be hostile towards workers.
Wow, okay.
And things like that. So that's just one thing. Another point I wanted to bring up, I know Baltimore City, I heard one of the councilmen mention about reducing the speed even more.
Yes, I know. Yep. That's Ryan Dorsey. Ryan Dorsey is a councilman over in the 3rd District, but he's talking about slowing everything down to protect the children who sometimes play near the curb, sometimes play in the street, but to slow things down a bit.
So I understand that. I understand why, but at the same time, I'm looking at another reason, another way to get more revenue for if you're already doing 30, I mean, I don't know how much slower someone can go.
I think he's talking about dropping that, I believe, 5 miles. Dropping it 5 miles, 5 or 10 miles, maybe down to 20.
Yeah, one of them. But then, I mean, you barely can get through the city now in some areas.
Yeah.
Some areas now, because there's so many red light and speed cameras. So now you got another situation that's going on. Like, I'm not advocating that it's okay to speed, but at the same time, they had a thing. See, I'm pretty good at this. I remember years ago, it was a thing about opening up streets or making lanes so you wouldn't burn so much gas. But now in Baltimore, with the bike lanes and cutting down the lanes, you're making traffic conditions even worse. Because now, one time, my wife would come home from downtown. She could make it home in 30 minutes. Now it's almost taking an hour
hour. Because you got to slow down. Because if not, but see, here's the other thing, Mitchell, and I got to let you go. Because if not, you're going to be hit with a bunch of tickets. I mean, these speeding tickets and the speeding cameras, I'm not saying they're not valid. I'm just saying I'm getting a whole lot of them. It's slowed me down completely. Everything takes more time now. Thank you so much, Mitchell. Have a good weekend. We have Brother Derek. I'm going to try to get to both of these calls before we go for the day. Brother Derek, how are you, sir?
Good evening, ma'am. How are you, Dr. Kent?
I'm doing well.
Fine. Thank you. Awesome show today. I just wanted to, you know, give a little feedback from my end, you know, my personal thoughts on it. The shooting with Dylan Roof and so forth. And I understand the science and the meaning behind forgiveness. But we're not as forgiving with each other as we are with everyone else.
Mm.
And it's the fact. I mean, I hear a lot of us coming on here, and I'm not knocking the forgiveness aspect, but I'm just saying that we're not as forgiving with ourselves. Just not too long ago, when the young African-American man had shot the police officer here in the county or so forth, They were calling for his judgment before he could get the hearing and so forth. They were calling for judgment even amongst our community. But even with that situation with the shooting and so forth, forgiveness has to be a balance. We have to be as forgiving with ourselves as well. In business, not just the shooting, but in business and the way we handle each other. We're not as forgiving as they're laying out with each other.
I like
but
that.
With anyone else, we're an open book. We're an open heart. And what it does is it inspires madness to go at us again. We need to, yes, forgive, but also set the balance that there's a price to be paid when you violate a people at such a level.
Okay, thank you so much, Brother Derek. We're going to leave it there, folks. Please know this show, the support for WEAA, is provided by Live Baltimore. Fall 2018 Trolley Tour coming to Baltimore Poly High School on Saturday, September 22nd, 8:30 to 1 p.m. Come out, meet and greet real estate professionals experiencing various neighborhoods. More details at livebaltimore.com. That's going to be the show for today. Today with Dr. K is a production of WEAA. It's produced by Justina Pollard with assistance from Ty Rice. And we have, of course, our board operators, Andre Melton and Charlie Hines, and our new intern, Deja Edwards, who actually produced one of our packages today. Great job, Deja. Stay tuned. Up next is For the Culture with Faraz. As you remember, folks, here on Today with Dr. K, your voice matters, your opinion matters. We tell stories that matter. If it has your ear, it absolutely has my attention. Meet me back here on Monday. Let's talk again and keep it here for a final update from MTA.
And a good evening, everybody. Still seeing some bus diversions, including the Purple Line eastbound at Pratt and Pulaski, and the Purple Line westbound diverted at Lombard and Monroe. 56 eastbound diverted at Philadelphia Road and Rothschild Boulevard. 56 westbound and 62 northbound.